What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
You know how you are. She's like, she's upset that Elon Musk is wearing a ball cap in the Oval Office. And I'm just kind of like, meh.
Did anybody get my back in that conversation?
No, but because these are my friends, Rachel.
I guess. I bet you even my friends would be like, let it go. Literally. It's okay. But I stand by what I think. Put on a shirt and tie.
Welcome to Rivera and Reeves, the podcast where we break through the bias, report the news, and occasionally trip over our soapboxes while ranting about the headlines.
Every week, we tackle the biggest stories with sharp analysis, unfiltered honesty, and just enough sarcasm to keep it fun.
So pull up a chair, grab your coffee, and join us as we wade through the spin, because the media is trash and we have zero patience for their nonsense.
Hey, friends, and welcome to another episode of Rivera and Reeves. I'm Mercedes, and I'm here with my friend Rachel. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello, Rachel.
This is a reentry episode, folks, okay? Also, we were gone. Was I as beautiful in person as I am on camera?
You literally asked that the last episode we did. The one episode we did last week, you're sitting across from me, and I'm staring at your face, and you're like, am I just as beautiful? And I said, Mercedes, you're even more beautiful in person.
I'm just so insecure.
You need the affirmation.
I need the affirmation yet again. Mind you, the two of us look like hot garbage right now.
My hair is, they say the high, is it the bigger the hair, the closer to heaven?
Yeah.
I'm getting up there.
Oh my goodness. All right. So this episode is re-entry. We weren't here. We only did one episode last week because we were on a retreat. Let me put it this way. I was on Rachel's retreat for its Providence and Purpose. Or is it Providence and
Providence and Purpose.
Okay. I was like, did I get that switched around?
It's Providence and Purpose. It's always been Providence and Purpose, and it will remain Providence and Purpose. It was my first one in the beautiful hills of Virginia, a little bit southwestern area from where I am. But yeah, it was lovely, and we had an excellent time. It was the first one I've ever done, and I loved every minute of it. I'm still just like thinking about it. Yes, you are,
because you keep sending me a message about. I know. So there was this thing that we talked about. I'm like, yes, dear.
Yes, I know. But it was wonderful. And there's another one in November if you're interested from the things you've seen on our socials. If you want to join me, I'm still trying to talk Mercedes into coming in November, but I don't know if I
not. That November is such a busy month.
I know.
Like, we're going into such a busy season, and I have so many already like things on the calendar. So.
I get it. But for you out there, come
if you're considering ongoing just to meet me, I'm sorry, but I may not be there. But there are better reasons.
Settle for me, I guess.
it was really great, and it was good for me too. So even though Rachel kind of dragged me kicking and screaming, I'm glad that you did.
Good. I'm glad too.
So we have re-entered. It's actually been relatively slow because of the Memorial Day weekend, which I really hope everybody took a moment to recognize why we celebrate Memorial Day. I always find it very awkward when you start seeing posts like our president who posts Happy Memorial Day. I think that's weird, personally.
It's so funny, though. That was a big argument. I've never before on any other Memorial Day had so many people talking about how it's weird to say Happy Memorial Day. So I thought that was weird. And I don't know if that's just because people are more kind of touchy-feely these days and kind of nervous about everything that they say. But I don't remember ever having this conversation. Everybody always kind of knew what Memorial Day was. I mean, we did have a vice president that, like, I think tweeted out, enjoy your long weekend. So it definitely isn't the
first time. Well, and she got quite a bit of beef for that when
that
happened.
Yes, and she should, because everybody knows what it is. But this year, everybody was like couching their Happy Memorial Day comments. And then I saw I think he works for the Wounded Warrior Project. He's a veteran, and he was wounded in combat. And it was a video yesterday, and he said, everybody's kind of giving everybody else a hard time for saying Happy Memorial Day. He said, but I think it's wonderful to be happy on Memorial Day because we are acknowledging the freedoms that I, as a veteran, fought for and am able to enjoy. And I want that for other people. I might be the minority, but this is what I want as a veteran.
That's a really interesting perspective. Right. Yeah.
So I still say happy Memorial Day. But it was the first year where I felt nervous. Like I felt like I had to say happy meaningful Memorial Day. Like I was nervous. And I was just like, what's happening?
I've never been like the police on anything, like the Happy Memorial Day police. I just think it's always kind of weird. Like, it's fine if you say Happy Memorial Day in remembrance of those who have fallen and sacrificed, but I think it is weird to go Happy Memorial Day, enjoy your summer weekend at the barbecue and at the beach or
here's
at the
a
pool.
Sale. Use this discount code on Memorial Day.
I'm like, yes, I had a pool. I can't be like, I wasn't having a vigil here. Okay. I had a house full of people. We were grilling. We were pooling. Like,
yes,
obviously that's what you do on a long weekend, especially the very cloudy, kind of cold first day of quote unquote summer.
Summer, yeah.
So, but I'm hoping that everybody enjoyed their long weekend.
Mm-hmm.
We are just diving in here, kind of cold plunge, because the biggest thing that I would say, obviously, we did have that horrible event in Washington, D.C. at the Jewish Museum.
I believe so. In Washington, D.C.
There was a young couple that was assassinated outside when they were leaving by this guy that there was absolutely no question as to his motivation of why he shot these individuals.
Well, they were both Jewish.
Yes. Well, okay, so that whole conversation was weird because immediately they were like, the people who were disgustingly trying to, I guess, kind of defend this guy, his last name is Rodriguez, which I'm like, really, dude? Ugh. Anyway, they were trying to say that because they were Messianic Jews, that they were Christian, that they weren't Jewish, and so it wasn't anti-Semitic. That was actually a debate that was happening online.
Yeah, that's stupid.
And I'm like, that is utterly ridiculous.
It is. And I'm pretty sure Mr. Rodriguez didn't know that they were Messianic Jews.
He was just waiting for them to come out of this event. He assumed that they were Jewish people. He said doing this, he admitted that he did it, quote unquote, for Palestine. Yeah. When he was being arrested, I also want to point out that he cried, free, free Palestine. Mm-hmm. Like in this exact same cadence that you hear on the university campuses.
Of course.
So I think to draw a connection between the two is not an insane conclusion.
Nope, not at all.
I am definitely not a person that will go like, I will not fault a group or, I don't know, a politician or anything like that because of the actions that somebody else takes. But you do have to acknowledge that a lot of the verbiage that we're hearing from one side was clearly what he was expressing when he did this.
Yeah, so I don't think you have to attribute every act of violence to the political side that that person was on. However, it would be foolish not to go, well, so what are the roots of his anger? Where does this motivation come from?
Correct.
What does it align with? I guarantee that if there was a gun-wielding psycho out there shooting, I don't know, Democrat operatives or activists and yelling MAGA when he shot them in cold blood, well, they would definitely be interested in his motivation and where his political leanings were. So, I mean, what's good for the goose?
Now we have two assassins that are starting to be, I mean, frankly, propped up by some of the most far-leaning progressive wing.
Yeah.
Because Luigi Mangione and now this guy, Elise Rodriguez. So... Yeah. I think he was just arraigned. That's sort of, we'll see how that kind of pans out. What I thought was wild was that the people at the event didn't know he was the shooter initially, and they were treating him
like as, he had been injured in some
kind. As a victim, checking to see if he had been injured and describing him as being in shock of what he had just done, informed everybody at the event of what his motives were.
Yeah, I heard he was like sitting there crying and then said, I just did this, something to that effect.
I can't even, which to me says that he talked himself into doing what he did.
Mm-hmm.
Like he talked himself into, I'm going to do this for Palestine. This is morally good. I guess, is what he tried to convince himself of. And he's in shock afterwards. And now he's, this is what I did and this is why I did it. So, which I think is like even, I mean, it's very premeditated, but he, like, to me, it says that he had to pep talk himself into doing what he did.
Right.
Which is almost more disturbing that you can convince yourself to do something like that.
Yeah. The whole thing is brazen acts of violence are becoming very normal and somewhat ubiquitous with the progressive wing in our country. It's almost exclusively owned by that side of the political aisle. I mean, if you think about the trans shooter manifesto for the, what was the elementary school?
Covington.
Yeah, you got stuff like that. And then you have Luigi and you have this guy and then you have the assassination attempts on the president. And it's just becoming.
Well, and what about the fertility clinic, clinic that just happened also while we were gone? Okay, I don't know, because that one happened. Did that happen while or right before we left for the retreat? I cannot remember.
I feel like.
I think it was right before.
I'm not a good judge of
the timeline right now. The news cycle moves so fast sometimes, like you lose track of what happened.
Yeah.
That one to me was probably out of the recent events that have happened, probably the most confusing and the most disturbing, because initially it happened. It was a fertility clinic in California that focuses on IVF.
Yeah.
And it was bombed.
Yeah.
And initially, it's just, I get so annoyed with the conversations that you see online. So initially, everybody's, this is kind of like a pro-life person that is against.
Oh, don't you love that?
That's IVF.
Right. Those pro-lifers, they're crazy. They really are. That fits their brand, going out and bombing stuff.
Well,
and the second I say that too, you are, I know in my comments, I'm going to get one or two people that always comment and say, well, you know, back in the 1980s, there was pro-life proof that went, you know, and stormed a abortion clinic. And I'm like, okay, yes, but there.
Well, and that
one time in the 80s.
History, the reason that we even have this law currently that does not allow people to protest outside of abortion clinics is because of those attacks that happened back in the, because I think that passed. Was it while Hillary was senator or was it while Bill Clinton? I can't remember exactly when it passed. I mean, it passed that long ago. But it was in response to there were attacks on abortion clinics. And so they're like, okay, so now you can't, it's like the gun-free zone sign.
Yes.
It's now that we make this law, you can't attack this as if they're going to listen to the law. I'm like, okay. So that is what the response is. And that's the history of like why we have this ridiculous law that people can't protest outside of Planned Parenthood or any kind of these abortion facilities or anything like that.
Right.
But so initially when that news broke, the conversation was that this was like a pro-lifer that is a radical that bombed the clinic. Turned out it was the extreme opposite. The guy was an anti-natalist, essentially. He was really radical in regards to concerns about population, like controlling population, people not having children because of the negative effects it has on the climate. I mean, it was wild. It was really nihilistic. It was really just anti-birth. Which is, I mean, you have to admit that there's definitely a contingent of that.
Yeah.
On the left.
Yeah. Like, so. The two aren't even comparable right now. There's not this underlying current of violence on the conservative side of things. I just think about the violence that's breaking out. And when I say that, I am including the violence that breaks out on almost every college campus that is having protests and has for the last, I mean, this fall when kids go back to school, it's going to be 2 years since October 7th. And there's been constant altercations and interactions with the police. These students think that violence against other students and pushback against law enforcement is totally normal. And then you have, like I said, the assassination attempts and these really brazen acts of just violence, and it's happening more and more. I mean, we did a whole episode on it. Violence is the key right now, and it's really pretty one-sided, if you ask me.
Well, so over the weekend, there was, I forget the name of this group. They're like a far right, like legitimately like far, they do those stupid marches.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. They all wear their khaki pants. They're the Lincoln Project tried to dress up that Democrat. The Democrat group tried to dress up and cosplay and pretend like they were the Republicans with the tiki torches.
But yes, yes.
Democrat activists.
They do these ridiculous marches through streets. They come rolling out of these U-Haul trucks with their
face. They came through the March for Life when I was there. And it was hilarious. They showed up. There was like maybe 15 of them and all the marchers. There was tons of pro-lifers there. They all just kind of looked at them like, okay, bye. And just walked right past them. They tried to stop the march and people were like, no. Goodbye.
Bunch of losers.
Away. Yeah.
Well, and I think that is a distinct difference. Why can I not remember their name? Is it Union something? It's like,
it's not Proud Boys, obviously.
No, it's not the Proud Boys.
I'm going to look it up. You keep talking. I'm going to look it up.
Well, I think they recently, because they kind of went quiet right after the election. And so everybody's had this theory that they're just a bunch of feds and that it's all like a production.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Patriot Front.
Patriot Front. I was like, it's like Union Front, something front. Okay, so the Patriot Front. And I think they recently, just this weekend, and it may have been for Memorial Day, which is like even more disappointing, but they had done a walk or a march, maybe through Nashville. I'm not 100% sure. I don't follow these people. I really don't care about them.
Right.
They're idiots, okay? And I think that is what is important to point out here, because everybody like, oh my gosh, these horrible, like these, I don't know, Nazis or this Patriot Front or this group has put up this sign. The right does not embrace them. The right does not make excuses for them.
Yeah, we ignore them and treat them like exactly what they are.
Like the fools that they are. I cannot think of a single person of influence that's like, yeah, that's my bro. I'm going to hang out with those people.
None of us.
Everybody says they're idiots. And in fact, they said that they're such idiots. They give them like even a bigger insult by insinuating that they're feds, which I mean, the jury is out on that. I know a lot of our listeners are like, yes, they're absolutely feds.
Well,
I don't think they're feds either, especially because there's always that one dude or that one person that leads them that isn't masked.
Yeah.
So I'm like, why would the person that is not masked be like, oh, yeah, I have this group of it makes no sense to me. The logic is not there. I actually went to their page one time because because I'm me, because I was curious. I was like, and like their stuff is really, you know how there's that we had this discussion before about the what do you call it? The woke right. Oh, my gosh.
You can Rachel. Do it. Re-entry is hard.
But there's this whole discussion about the woke right and how there are elements on both the left and the right where the stuff begins to horseshoe and they kind of become one, but they just think that they're different. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And reading the page of this group, Patriot Front, I would say that I agree with that because they very much see themselves as being a victim. They're very identity politics focused. It's just about you have to be this certain type of person because we need to unify against these institutions which are actively moving against us and we're the victim of them and everything, which is very similar of what you see of things on the left.
Yes.
So if we were to revisit the woke right conversation, I would probably put them in that category. I still think it's like a whole bogus currently still. It's not to say that it couldn't formulate into something more valid, but the point being is that in this discussion of who's being violent, who's being having these quote-unquote woke tendencies, you're seeing it much more on the left and it being welcomed by people who are of influence on the left versus on the right. And I think it's because for so long we've been called all kinds of names and been accused of all kinds of things that were much more willing to call it out than people on that lean to the left and even the leadership, because frankly, you don't hear enough from actual Democrat politicians to speak out directly against the things. They're always like giving the platitude of it's like Ilhan Omar. You saw what happened after the shooting in D.C. with these two, with, you know.
I did, but please fill in our listeners in case she's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so wonderful. She was coming out of the Capitol, and I think it was Fox News that went up to her and asked her for comment on the shooting. And she was like, I'm not going to talk about this right now.
Really? You're not just going to say, yeah, that's horrible. Never
happened. She's like, no, I'm not. I don't want to talk about this right now. I'm not going to talk. I think that should be like a knee-jerk reaction of this is absolutely horrible. I do not condone this. So then after she got a bunch of like the video started to go viral, she got a bunch of criticism. Like 2 hours later, she posts on her ex condolences. But I don't necessarily, I would have to look up the post because it was very like,
it's tepid, lukewarm.
Yeah, it was very tepid.
Well, it's obligatory. They have to. Uh-huh. She has to say something.
I will give AOC some credit. She did absolutely say that violence is not condoned in any way. This was horrible. And she did
good.
But I think we still have to go back to the times where she's been asked, do you not think that some of your language has contributed to the violence that, I hate to say that, you see on the left? And that was during the time that the Tesla showrooms were getting bombed and attacked.
Yeah.
When private citizens
and she basically said, it's like the cry of the unheard, like that whole thing, which is so stupid, but whatever.
She was like,
exact same stuff that people said about the burning down of cities during the George Floyd summer of 2020, which, by the way, it's the 5-year anniversary. So everybody's let's remember that summer. And I'm like, can we not go back to that? Because that was horrible. And all of you were like, this is what happens when people haven't been listened to for decades. And I'm over here. Hey, this is not a quiet, peaceful, yet fiery protest. Get a grip. But that's what all of their responses are. It's please don't look at what you're actually looking at and listen to me tell you that it's totally something else. And AOC is the queen at that. So that now when she makes comments like, oh yeah, the shooting people is bad, people are like, yeah, but do you really believe that? Or have you just learned your lesson from the past when you said nothing? Or, well, yeah, I mean, I'm sorry that Aunt Sally's food stand got burned to the ground during summer where she invested her life savings, but that's just kind of what you get.
So I found the tweet from Ilhan Omar. She goes, I'm appalled by the deadly shooting at the Capitol Jewish Museum last night, holding the victims, their families, and loved ones in my thoughts and prayers. Violence should have no place in our country. So that's her post.
Yeah, so someone got to her and was like, you need to post something now. They're doing damage control with Ilhan.
Mind you, just her next post on her, this is her account, not her representative account, it's not her official account. Her next post is about George Floyd, which is actually a thread.
Great.
That is three posts long.
Oh, so he got three posts, but the two dead Jews got a mere mention because her press agent was like, please say something, just say anything. And please don't say what you want to say.
I mean,
type out this thing that I've already typed out for you.
If you just want a representation of like priorities, let's go
crazy.
There.
Yeah.
I actually wrote about this entire topic, this assassin culture that seems to be on the rise on the left. So that article, if you guys are interested in it, it's on my Substack and it's open and free to everybody. It's one of those nice long reads where I provide receipts, many receipts.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
So, okay, now the other thing that happened while we were gone was the big, beautiful bill.
Oh, okay.
The BBB.
I'm just really trying to muster up excitement for the B cubed.
The B cubed. I like that. The B cubed. So, first of all, it is literally called the Big, Beautiful Bill Act, which,
I don't know. I just, again, everybody's, it's Trump. It's Trump. And I'm like, I know it's Trump, but... Why?
It was so funny. I'm looking at your face right now. You were so stressed out. I was actually talking about you yesterday at my cookout.
Oh, no.
Yes, because I was explaining, because we had this discussion.
Were you trying to explain to people who
I am? Well, like our dynamic. So yeah. I was explaining to them how we met, how we started up. We talked about this at the retreat and stuff like that, and how I was like reluctant initially for us to podcast together because I thought you were more square or whatever, and like we wouldn't vibe or whatever. And I was like, it's worked out great. We've done awesome. She's just, you know how you are. She's like, she's upset that Elon Musk is wearing a ball cap in the Oval Office. And I'm just kind of like, meh.
Did anybody get my back in that conversation?
No, but because these are my friends, Rachel.
I guess. I bet you even my friends would be like, let it go. Literally. It's okay. But I stand by what I think. Put on a shirt and tie.
I know. Well, which is why I'm laughing, because you're like annoyed that it's called the Big Beautiful Bill.
I am. And I guarantee everybody else, they're not annoyed. But the first thing they
it's stupid.
Roll the eyes. Come on. The Big Beautiful. This is going down like the archivist for our country is going to have to literally type into our books like the actual record of the United States of America. Big Beautiful Bill.
You have to look.
No, I don't have to anything.
No, I'm not saying that you have to agree with me. I'm just saying I'm like providing the context of this. Calm down. Take a break. Drink your coffee. Look, she's actually drinking her coffee. Okay.
I am.
So there's a lot of things. Obviously, I support the president. Yes, I support the president. I want him to succeed. I want this, like the Congress to succeed. Okay. Mm-hmm. Regardless of what's going on here, I think we're in a better situation than we could have been in. However,
oh my gosh, yes.
I do see a lot of like people, how do I say this? Kind of being accepting of things that you criticized before.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. And saying, kind of couching it, look, I didn't vote for this, but I voted for all the other things he's doing. And I think that that's perfectly fine.
Yes.
Point is, though, that if a handful of things that Trump has done, had Biden or Harris done them, people would be up on their socials just decrying it. You got to be kidding me. This is ridiculous. This is why our country is going down the wrong path. And it's, well, okay, you need to be willing to say that with Trump. And I think some people are doing that, but it's definitely not with the same fervor that if this bill was being introduced under a Harris-Walz ticket, people would be righteously upset about how much debt it's going to add.
Well, it raises the debt ceiling and it adds
debt. Almost $4 trillion in the next decade. Had this been under a different administration, many conservatives would be up in arms about it, very upset. But since it's Trump, it's, well, yes, but there's these good things in it. And it's, well, you never do that any other time. You don't look at bills that like Democrats are bringing forward when it's a Democrat administration and saying, well, it adds a lot of debt, but look at these good things in it.
Not well, and I think the frustration is too, just in general, the fact that it's called the Big Beautiful Bill, and it's,
it is a big bill.
And it's like a giant omnibus bill almost.
Yeah.
And so typically, like most people on the right for a long time have been criticizing, like, we don't want these big giant bills where you just stuff it full of things.
Yeah, they want it.
Yeah. And now all of a sudden, this is literally the branding of it. It is literally called the Big Beautiful Bill.
And now, everyone's like, well, it's okay because he's doing some good things in it, which I agree with. It's just, it's not fairly applied.
And that's honestly my only criticism here, because there are things in this bill that are absolutely necessary. Like, how do you go? But I think that's why it irritates me, because you're almost holding people hostage again. So there's this discussion of, we absolutely needed to codify Trump's 2017 tax cuts.
Yes.
And extend them and make them where they can't, because otherwise we were looking at, I don't know, like a 20-24% increase in taxes if they expired.
Yes.
For the middle class, for common everyday people. We're not even talking about the rich like the Democrats want to talk about half the time.
Yeah.
We're talking about everybody would end up getting a tax increase. That's not good. Obviously, no. I don't want to give more money to the federal government. I don't even think I should be taxed to begin with.
Correct. We agree on that.
Let's just put that out there. But also at the same, so yes, I want that to happen. There's a bunch of other things that I really want to happen. But then there's a bunch of concerns in regards to raising the debt ceiling, in regards to DOGE cuts not being codified, the predicted addition that this could potentially add to our deficit in 10 years. Now, there's arguments as to why that won't happen. Scott Bessent is kind of like a little PR campaign like he does, Mr. Suave, with his rubber mask that I'm sure he's going to rip off one day. Like, I'm convinced that he's like Mission Impossible under there. Tom Cruise is really who's underneath that mask, okay? But eventually, he's doing like a PR thing where he is making the argument that we need this. I don't even know exactly why he's trying to make the argument, but he's trying to, his claim is that we can sustain this because we're going to grow our way out of the debt.
Yeah, which I just
Well, it does happen. And a lot of, especially, I'm not surprised that it's coming from him, from the business mindset that he has, because many businesses will do that. Like, they'll make cuts, and it's about balancing where there's cuts and also finding a way to grow your way out of it. The question is that what we're going to manage to pull off? And not only is that what we're going to manage to pull off in these 4 years, but we obviously would need at least
we would need the next president to continue down the same trajectory. And it's asking for a lot of things to happen and coincide all at one time. And this is at a time where there's so many moving parts. You have all these like deals that we're waiting to find out about from different countries coming to the table and discussing tariffs and like basically renegotiating our relationship with the world in regards to trade. You have that happening, and you have people, the stock market's kind of fluctuating, the housing
market, the bond market,
yeah, the bond market's crazy, the housing market's a little unsteady. All these different things are happening all at once. It kind of depends on a smooth, really positive uptick in American industry, really. And as we've talked about with like business owners and amongst ourselves and on social media, there's a lot of nervousness in our country, even for small business owners who want to make more American-made goods. They're like, well, we need time to figure this out. It's not a light switch. You can't just all of a sudden go, okay, everything's happening in-house now. There has to be this kind of like period of time where we're readjusting to the to this new reality of production. And I like that's going to take the 4 years. And then what happens if we have a flip of an administration? So then what happens to this added, some estimates like the CBO saying it's $4 trillion added to the debt, but then you have other like models that are saying it's closer to $5 trillion added to the debt. So then we just get added debt with none of the benefits that Bessent and Trump are
promising. And I mean, I do point out that like even the CBO and those predictions, which always frustrates me, most of them base their models on things staying kind of like a constant of where we're at.
Yeah.
So that's where Bessent makes the argument. He's like, the CBO, and he even said this, I can't remember exactly what his words were, but the CBO is a government, like they just stay at a constant, but we're going to grow our way out of this. We have a three-leg approach here. You know, his usual spiel, which like he's become my favorite and he's become very reassuring in that sense, but we are threading a needle here. This isn't easy peasy.
Yeah.
And it is a little frustrating for OG conservatives like ourselves to see a party that's, yeah, sure, let's kind of roll this gamble and roll this gamble, roll the dice
That's it. We're getting a new sticker. It happened.
We're going to roll this gamble. Roll the dice on this gamble and see if we manage to, you know,
come out the other end successful.
Come out the other end, even though we haven't made any sufficient. Because let me tell you, if you want to deal with having a constant or whatever, just make some cuts.
And I think that this is the time where I can somewhat see what my Democrat friends are saying when they're like, what does Trump have to lose? He has this term and he's done. He's not running again. So for him, as Mercedes would say, he can roll this gamble because, I mean, he can do whatever he wants right now. He has 3.5 years left and then he's out of the federal government. He's done. So he can kind of take these bets and go, well, let's try something. And maybe it will end up being a big win for America. I'm not sure. But I just, again, going back to what you said at the top, like it feels to me like we're definitely being very permissible about things that if it was the other side of the aisle doing it, we would not be very happy about. And then it kind of annoys me that someone like Thomas Massey, who is pretty consistent most of the time about he wants fiscal responsibility within the federal government. He doesn't want to continue doing the same thing we always do, omnibus, 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 and raising the debt limit and continuing to spend with money we don't have. And he's very consistent. And he does keep getting elected. Like, people like him. And so then he speaks out. And he's like, I'm not voting for this. It's the same old stuff. It's the same slop that the Democrats bring. And then Trump, Caroline Leavitt from the podium.
Yeah, he gets a lot of criticism.
They're like, he's a grandstander and this is ridiculous. And he should, every single Republican needs to align with Trump. And I'm like, well, that's not really how politics works. That's not how the Congress and the House of Representatives should be. But that's the state of politics right now. You are only loyal if you vote the way the president wants you to vote. And I just have a very different idea of how personal responsibility should work.
Yeah. So. Well, I mean, it just passed the House. Just to give you guys a little bit of what is in it, it hasn't gone through the Senate yet. So what we have that has been passed by the House does not necessarily mean that this is the end product. The Senate is also going to take things out, add things, make adjustments. So we're not done yet.
Right.
And Schumer has already put out a statement that this time the Senate is not going to help at all with this bill, which I think is wild to me that considering some of the things that are in this bill that the Democrats are like, no, we're going to allow your taxes to be raised. We're not going to vote for a child tax credit boost. You know what I mean? There are some things in here that are objectively bipartisan.
Yep.
And actually, I would argue even more Democrat traditionally, but they're like, no. So let's see what we have here. The big thing is that the 2017 Trump tax cuts are going to be permanent, which is humongous.
Yep.
No tax on tips. No tax on overtime pay, which I agree with, because obviously I don't think you should be taxing anyone. But this whole no tax on tips, I do see it potentially being abused.
Really?
Because a lot of people assume, oh, that's just the waitress or whoever you traditionally tax, the busboy or the bellhop at the hotel or whatever. But at some point, some employee, I don't know what the limitations are on this. But I could potentially see an employer being like, okay, you're going to get taxed on this. Therefore, I no longer have you. It's tax free for you. You'll enjoy it as an employee. Also, I'll have benefits from it because I can categorize you as a different type of employee and save myself in labor costs.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of loopholes being.
Yeah, there's a potential for loopholes there. I personally like this whole like waitresses should. I liked being a server. I was a server and I liked being off of tips versus a living, quote unquote, living wage. Mm-hmm. But that was because I was a good server and I made bank.
Yeah. So this is going to work really well for crummy server. Basically.
We will see. There's also health savings account limits have gone up. So that means the annual contribution limits have doubled for low and middle earners. Individual limits, which were currently at $4,300, are going up to $8,600. Married couples were at $8,550.
Yeah.
Married couples now go up to over $17,000.
Wow. Okay.
And only applies if you make under $75,000 for individuals and $150,000 as married couples.
Okay.
And then both spouses can now contribute to catch up on contributions on the same HSA account.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's definitely, I think that's a good thing. Democrats apparently don't like that so much. The child tax credit boost is currently at $2,000 per child. The new temporary amount is $2,500 per child. That's going to be from 2025 to 2028. And then after 2028, it goes back to $2,000, but it's going to be indexed for inflation. So we'll see where it lands. But you do get a little bit of a boost for a short amount of time. It always annoys me when they do like stuff for just a short amount of time as if we're not going to need it later.
Well, and isn't that like a common refrain that if the government starts something, they're never going to stop it?
Basically. Yeah, like
it's pretty hard for them to go back and backtrack and be like, we're going to take this away now.
So I don't know. It's just interesting. But they do say that if you earn at least $48,550 as a married couple, you will get the full $2,500 tax credit per child.
Okay.
So no tax credit for me. Also, we have more border security. It adds $46.5 billion for border security. So this is for wall construction, border patrol agents, better technology and equipment, and customs and border protection gets a boost. So I think this is particularly good because this helps maintain the immigration issue if, I mean, they could decide just not to spend the money. At least it's in a bill this time, as opposed to before Trump had reassigned funds in order to do the bill, and then it was just easily undone. So those are the good things probably from it. The bad is like what we talked about. It adds to the predicted $2.5 trillion deficit over 10 years. With interest, we're talking $3.1 trillion.
And that's a low end estimate.
That's a conservative estimate for sure.
Yeah, there's a lot of estimates that are going straight up to almost $5.7 trillion. So that's crazy.
So I don't know. We'll see if we can actually grow ourselves out of it. But you're seeing even Elon Musk, because he's officially done as the special government employee that he was.
Well, and you can tell because the media isn't talking about how he is now the shadow president. Mm-hmm. They've moved on. They have new narratives that they're working with right now.
Now, Doge itself still exists. Like the employees that were hired by him and the Doge team, they still exist. They're still in these administrative offices. They're still trying to implement these changes. There was actually an interview last night of Elon and the Doge team again by Jesse Waters. I didn't watch it though, so I can't give context on it, but they were discussing what they have done so far, what they hope to accomplish. But Elon is going out there. He recently did a post where he's disappointed that this bill does not have more to protect the Doge cuts, because the issue and why he's pointing that out is, as of right now, everything that has been done with Doge has been through the executive branch.
Yeah.
And it's just been the administration of the executive branch. So it's, remember, what was the analogy I used last time? It was like they're given the money that says that you can pet kitties, but then the administration decides how you pet them and which ones you can pet.
Right. And not that one, only this one. Yes. Yeah.
So if another administration comes in, because this stuff hasn't been officially codified and the power of the purse hasn't taken control and designated how these Doge cuts are implemented, another administration could come in and basically undo the majority of the work that Doge has done.
Right.
And that is one of the criticisms that Elon Musk has been very vocal about over the last few days. And I think is very fair.
Yeah.
I mean, that was what a lot of us at the beginning of Trump's term, when he first was elected and inaugurated, we're all very excited about. We were excited about Doge. We were excited about these cuts. We were seeing the potential that can happen. Mm-hmm. But of course, all of these things are dependent on Congress doing their job in codifying these things.
Yes.
And not willing to, I don't know, stick their neck out. And it's, again, it was just so frustrating.
Yeah. And I wonder, I think time will eventually tell, but a lot of us were skeptical, but also optimistic about what Doge could do. And I'm not saying that Doge hasn't done some great things. The point, though, is I wonder if it was really brilliant marketing tactics. It got a lot of talk. It got so many people.
You think if it had been a little bit more quiet, maybe Congress would be more willing to.
Yeah.
Okay. So no chainsaw.
No chainsaw, no gold chainsaw and dancing around via. I don't know. I just think that perhaps if they had kind of targeted the fraud and extremely transparent about, which I don't think was a problem. I actually think that they were very transparent, but maybe just gone about it a different way. Perhaps it would have been like taken just a little bit more seriously if they would have been more of we're exposing this fraud for both Republicans and Democrats. I don't know. I mean, hindsight's 2020, but.
I think I agree with you, because especially we talked about this in the past. It's just the legacy media is always looking for something.
Yeah.
And when you give them an inch, they're going to go a mile. And they did not give him. Elon wasn't giving an inch. Okay. He was just giving it all.
Yeah.
And so it created an environment where people started to panic, especially Democrats. They started to stress out. it dominated the headlines for a long time, which then makes representatives and senators a little bit nervous about the cuts that are being done and how they're being done. It was a very disruptive style, which I was totally for, but Congress does not respond well to disruption to that degree. Correct. And so now they're afraid because constituents are aware of it. And so now they're more reluctant to pull the trigger because they're a bunch of weak little weaselly doofuses.
Babies.
Babies.
I know where you wanted to go with that, but the kid-friendly show, Mercedes.
Stop. It's just so frustrating. So now there are things that the Democrats are attempting to freak out about.
Yeah.
So their SNAP benefits being reduced by 5%. Mm-hmm. They're trying to claim that Medicaid is going to be cut.
No, listen. I have a problem with that narrative. It is disingenuous. They're lying knowing that Democrat voters are going to take that talking point and run with it without doing any of their own research. People need to stop listening to what they're feeding you and go learn for yourself.
Stop. If only to listen.
Yes. If only to like just so you don't look dumb when it turns out that they're not doing what you say that they're doing. No. Just having some sort of.
So what are they doing?
Well, okay, they're not just taking Medicare away, which is what they're saying. And yes. And they go so far as to be like, people are going to die because of the B-cubed bill, and they're going to, people are going to have their health insurance stripped from them. And it's, well, they're saying that there's not going to be enough food to go around, and people, it's not true. They're simply wanting to put guardrails around benefits and saying, and I share about it in a Substack article I wrote. Basically, it's common sense regulations around benefits that the federal government is doling out. And I think that that is not only responsible, but extremely common sense. When there is a country this big and fraud is and waste and just our benefit structures are so humongous, and we're taking care of such a, and I mean monetarily taking care of or contributing to families all across our country, to a degree at which we are doing, there needs to be some sort of regulations. We can't simply hand out benefits and money and Social Security. And when I say Social Security, I mean in the actual sense of Social Security, some type of safety net for billions of Americans and not expect there to be any.
It's millions of Americans. We don't have billions in the United
States. Sorry, you know what I mean. Yes, we have 330 million. But it's billions of dollars. Do you hear that? See?
They don't hear that.
They don't hear it?
It's no. Like
our timer just went off telling us to wrap it, and it gave
it
me like
very
a standing ovation. It was beautiful. But, I mean, we're talking common sense guardrails like you should be maybe trying to get a job or working 20 hours a week in order to collect on your benefits, which I think most
is reasonable. Most
Americans
crazy.
Would agree that it's reasonable.
Well, the Medicaid issue, it was two things primarily, which one of them is duh. Yeah. And it's the fact that it's removing illegal migrants from collecting Medicaid benefits.
Yeah.
No more for you. Also, you should be on the way of either self-deporting or boarding. So no mas, okay?
Yeah, we've been over this.
So there's that one. And then the other one is, mind you, the work requirements that they, I don't even think they're enough personally, because I think it's if you are able-bodied, so in other words, you're not collecting any kind of disability, but you are collecting Medicaid, you still have to at least work part-time. And I think the part-time is, I think maybe 20 hours. I don't even think it's that much.
I mean, okay. My daughter is in high school, does not drive yet, which she needs to get her license ASAP. And she has her whole workload and all the stuff we do as a family. And she still manages to work well over the amount needed. And I feel like she's home a lot. This isn't, it's not a huge ask is what I'm trying to get at here. It's really not, they're asking for a minimal assurance of productivity, putting something back into the country that is giving you a lot. And people, what they're going to say is there are some people that have disabilities, which limits their ability to go to a job, or people who have.
But these are people that are not, the bill says you're not on disability.
So this, again, don't just parrot talking points. Actually look at what the bill says. And what the bill says about these programs is, I just think, common sense. And also enacted in other countries around the world when it comes to social services that are being handed out by their governments. It's not a big ask. It's really not.
I don't know. Well, I'm disagreeing with you. I am agreeing with you. And I, as I said at the top of this discussion, it's in the Senate now. They have to give their two cents on it. Eventually, it will go into kind of like a House Senate committee. It's not a committee, but it's then the Senate proposed. They have a meeting, essentially, the leadership of each chamber. And they hash out what we're going to keep, what we're not going to keep, and what we're going to adjust before it ends up on Trump's desk. And he's clearly going to sign it, obviously, because this is going to be the biggest legislation that he's named it the Big Beautiful Bill. I cannot believe that this is something that he has proposed since his campaign. And we are still calling it the Big Beautiful Bill.
I'm not calling it that anymore. It's B cubed. That's it.
I like that, though. The B cubed is really funny. So that's it. That is our re-entry into the news cycle,
I guess. I don't know. We went from having, I don't know about you, but when you go on something like that, that kind of removes you from your normal day-to-day, which I love my normal day-to-day. I talk about it all the time. I love it. And also, I had my kids with me on one of the days at the retreat. My husband came out and we went to Monticello, and it wasn't like I was totally escaping from reality. But then you come back in, you're like, man, I don't know. It's weird. That's why it's called reentry. You're kind of acclimating to what, you know, is usual. But when it comes to the news, when you're around people and you're just talking and it's lovely and you're eating amazing food and having such a nice time connecting with people, and then it feels sometimes a little swampy to jump back into the news. And that's, I guess, why we kind of do it, because we're trying to make it less swampy for other
people. For everybody else. Yeah.
But it just is like death and shooting and lots of debt and angry infighting in the halls of Congress and people being kind of nasty to one another and war. It's, you know.
Well, that is why we're here, because that way you guys can check out when you need
to.
Right. And then you can check back in, because
we got you.
We will be here. Mm-hmm. It was really good, though, to spend some time, especially because sometimes I need to be forced to, because I can be such a workaholic, to just spend some time with some really great ladies who you can feel that you can actually have a conversation with, and you don't have to, like, I always joke about, like, you have to have a sniff test. You know how, like, dogs sniff each other out to see if they can get along?
Is that what you were doing? You were sniffing out?
I was, well, I mean, not literally. Like, I wasn't going up to people and, like, sniffing their rear ends.
Right.
But
That's good.
That is how it feels a lot of times now when you meet new people, just in any kind of normal, casual situation, which I think is, like, why a lot of us have resulted in isolation, because it's just easier than having to feel, especially as you get older, and it's easier than having to feel people out to see if you can just have a normal conversation with them and let your guard down without it turning into something.
No, I get it.
That was very encouraging. So I do highly recommend that if you are looking for something like that, consider Rachel's retreat. Kudos to her. I don't know if I could ever do a retreat. Coordinate. I did one time, and it's just, I'm such an introvert. It takes so much. Like, you were, if we ever do a Rivera and Reeves event retreat, that is for you. I do all the editing and the back of the house stuff, and you can coordinate those sort of things.
I will
do that.
I'll be out in the front smiling and hugging everybody.
It was funny too, because just our listeners have seemed to have gotten the memo that I'm not super touchy feely. And I could tell that the ladies at the retreat were like, can we hug you? And I'm like, yes, you can hug me. It's okay.
She doesn't bite.
I'm not going to bite. It'll be fine. So, but we are back full throttle. Rivera and Reeves, back to our regular schedule every Tuesday and Thursday. If this is your first time here, welcome. You have found your new favorite podcast. Make sure you give us a 5-star rating, lovely comment, and share it with a friend, because the algorithms currently hate us. If you want, in the moment, breaking news, you can follow both of us on our separate Instagram accounts. We're always sharing some of the same, but also very different content on each of those accounts. And if you don't want to be listening to us with ads, please consider becoming a paying supporter where you get bonus episodes, where we have an unfiltered episode once a month. And we just kind of talk about our feelings and have a group therapy session. So if you want that bonus content, please consider becoming a paying supporter. And you also have access to community. Check out our merch. We're all done. That's it for today's episode of Rivera and Reeves. Here is a reminder that the media is trash and we have no tolerance for it. Okay, bye.
Bye.